Welcome to Inspiration at Work, where you will hear from business leaders from around the world on what they are doing at work and through work to make the world a better place. This is the most positive talk radio show on the planet, where we have evicted the tenets of cynicism and criticism and set up residence on Inspiration Boulevard, right in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. And now, your host, America's Chief Inspiration Officer, Terry Barber.
This is our first of many to come, and so we're pretty excited about this. And I also want to greet and welcome my co-host, Stone Payton.
Thanks, man. It's going to be a ball. Inspiration at work. Those are not words you often hear in the same sentence, are they?
No, but we're going to make sure that we live up to the promise, because we have made a commitment going into this that we're going to create an environment, in fact, a resident, a community, if you will, where we have totally evicted those things of negativity, criticism, and cynicism has no place on this show. So we're going to talk about all things that are inspiring in and around the place of work. And today we've got a couple of really special guests, Chip Patterson and Darren Cohen. And we're going to speak with Chip in just a minute, but I want to kind of lay the foundation for where we're going today. You know, every single one of us at some point in time in our life has been involved in a job that whereby we just felt like we were underemployed. Stone, I mean, can you think of a job where you just thought, gosh, this is just beneath me?
Oh, yeah. Well, right out of school, I thought I got the marketing degree. I'm going to get the six-figure marketing job, right? Well, that wasn't the case at all. I went to work for an outfit that we won't name here, but there were a couple of things that I just really got under my skin quick. One was I had the manager come over and tell me at one point, you're going to work yourself out of a job. I mean, the guy was literally trying to tell me, slow down, don't work so diligently. And his message was, he didn't say it in so many words, but he was saying, you're making the rest of us look so bad because you're being so diligent, you're working so hard. And then I tell you what, really, the nail in the coffin for me is when one person on the team did something that did deserve a reprimand, no question about that, but he jumped on the entire team like we all did it. And that just, I mean, that just did it for me, man. That really soured me on the whole deal.
Well, that's an inspiration buster for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the fact is that every single one of us get into that position, those kinds of positions from time to time, especially early on in our career. But I meet people all the time now, especially in this economy, where that is not so unusual, even for guys and girls who are very advanced in their career and in their knowledge. But yet the principle at heart here is that when you are good and you're faithful, you're diligent in one opportunity, it seems always somewhere down the road to intersect with something that's bigger and better. But abandon the hard stuff, the things that you don't like, and there's a chance that you're going to miss the very thing that was right around the corner from you. And Chip, I know from having talked with you in the past, that is a story that you can relate to. I wish that you'd share a little bit with us about your earliest career and about your business and how that principle played out in your life.
Well, my story is a little different because I started working almost immediately after high school. I went to college for a quarter, and because of family problems, I came back and started parking cars for a business and for a living to pay for my college. And I guess I didn't feel underemployed, because at that time I really appreciated this job, because my job before that was pumping gas at Exxon for, I think, $2.85 an hour. So I thought it was a great opportunity to get a job.
I remember $2.85 an hour.
Yeah.
That's when they were paying 36 cents for a gallon of gas, too, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not going to date myself like that. But, no, I remember opening a paycheck after 2 weeks, and I think it was $100 or under $100, and wondering, wow, that was a lot of work for $100. But I got this job parking cars, which I thought was fantastic. I got to drive great cars and meet a lot of people and make more money than I ever made in my life parking cars. So,
and it seems like somewhere within that story, though, you came across a guy who owned a restaurant in Buckhead in downtown Atlanta, yeah. And he eventually kind of challenged you to think a little bit differently about business, though.
He did. When they hired me as a valet, and they pay you a base hourly, and you keep your tips. And the gentleman came out and said he'd rather not pay a base hourly anymore, and he owned the parking lot. So he said, why don't you just lease the parking lot from me? Why don't you pay me $500 a month, to be specific, and you can keep everything you make. And I didn't even know what a lease was then. I think I was 18 years old, and he worked up a document, and I signed it, and a business was started at that moment. So now it was mine, my parking lot.
Pretty amazing story. And now take us forward just a little bit into your life. You started with one lot right there downtown in Buckhead, and it is now grown into what? What's the picture look like today?
Yeah, today, if you want me to fast forward to today, it's a little different now. We're in 22 cities and most of the major MSAs in the United States, and employ right at about 2,000 people, parking attendants like I was, and people who actually operate very large parking operations, and then regional managers, and then a whole corporate staff that supports the company. So it's pretty amazing to look back, you know, and say, wow, it's been a long road, but a short road at the same time.
Yeah, and I just think so much about concerning the very principle. The truth is, had you looked at what you were presented and thought, golly, I don't think I want to do something that's that hard, that's challenging. All of a sudden, I had a job, and now I got something where you're going to charge me?
Was that your first thought, though? I mean, at 17, 18 years old, did you see it for the opportunity that it was, or did it take a little while to get that kind of frame around it?
No, I absolutely had no idea what it would turn into. I was very grateful for that one opportunity, but then quickly realized there were similar opportunities in the city to go find other parking lots. And I'm trying to think of the equivalent. I mean, I just kept my head down and went lot to lot to lot, and I remember looking up 3 years later and saying, oh, we've got 18 parking lots, you know. And it wasn't something that I put out on a plan and set out to do. I just would wake up in the morning and take another step and another step, and never really looking up to see how big the pie was.
How did parking work back then? Was the restaurateur responsible for it? What I'm trying to get at, what problem were you solving? It was great for you, but what problem were you solving?
Well, there were two problems. One, our biggest problem that we solved was not enough parking. So we would come in, and the lot that I started with had 20 parking spaces, and this restaurant would fit several hundred people. So by me parking the cars, I could put 40, 45 cars in this 20-space lot. So that was the service to the restaurant, and then we would just charge a $2 fee to do that. Now they could park off site or in one of the surrounding lots, but if they wanted to park near the front door and they wanted the service and the security, then I was there to serve that.
I think it's wonderful though that now, because you were faithful in those early days doing the things that were very difficult, you're in a place now where you're beginning to do some things that are way beyond the scope of just the organization. You're involved in some things that are truly not just inspiring people, but you're doing some things that are transformational in terms of how your work and your giving is transforming and really impacting lives. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, about 2 years ago, I sold a division of the company, a division that focused on hotels. We would do doorman and bellman and valet and parking attendants for hotels, and we sold that part of the business, and it was an equity event for myself and our employees. And, you know, I decided at that point, I had just kind of been a capitalist pig up to that point and just not really worried about anybody but our own organization. I wouldn't say just me because I was organizationally focused, but, I kind of knew that I wanted to do something more and take, you know, what, talent, I don't even know what that is, my talent, but some talent, and try to put it towards doing something more powerful than parking cars.
And so some of the things that you're involved with, I mean, I overheard you telling the story not long ago about something with bicycles. You have to tell the story.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. It's kind of like getting my first parking lot. Things just seem to happen, but I went on a kind of a vision trip, if you will, to Nicaragua with a friend of mine, and we were looking at different opportunities to serve in, you know, Latin America, and while I was there, I noticed that the biggest form of transportation is bicycles, and really bad bicycles, you know, two, three people on a bicycle going to and from work. I mean, it was down highways, and I thought, wow, any bicycles. I don't know why I thought of that. I ride bikes a lot, so maybe that's what I focused on. But I got home, and I talked to my daughter about doing a bike drive with her volleyball team. And so the volleyball team was eager to do a little bike drive, and our goal was to find 40 used bikes, and we were going to ship them over to Nicaragua. There's a Young Life group over there we're going to send them to. And I called the guy that I know at the bike shop and told him what we were doing and said we might want to send a mechanic as well and maybe train someone over there to fix the bikes or build bikes or whatever as part of the package. And he said, well, I got another idea. Why don't how would you like 150 new mountain bikes to send over there? And I said, well, that would be great.
We'd entertain that. You know, we're willing to talk.
And so all of a sudden he said, be here at this time in this place and you know, kind of give a little speech of what you're going to do with them, and they're all yours. So what they've been doing are these workshops, kind of an inspirational workshop within, it was PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they do this for employee training, and they build bikes together. So it's kind of that Habitat Humanity model where everybody goes out and builds a house, but instead they're building bicycles. And they just don't know what to do with them. So they gave them to us, and that was only a few weeks ago, and now we have 500 new mountain bikes sitting in a storage unit, and we're figuring out, you know, the right partners in country and out of country to get those to the needy and the deserving.
We need a delivery partner, right?
We need a delivery partner. All that's right. What we're working on right now.
Cool. Because
if anybody is listening who has an idea for Chip for a delivery partner, this
somebody
is your
with
chance.
A boat, right?
Yeah, we need a boat.
A big boat.
We also, you know, we also want to get them to people in need. You know, I think one of the stories I had from Nicaragua is we were driving back from Granada, and there was a lady walking down the street, and it was raining. She was walking down the highway, and it was pouring down rain, and we pulled over and picked her up, and it turned out she was a nurse at the hospital. She was on her way to work, and we got her in the car, and in Spanish she told us, you know, that she works the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. She walks a couple miles each way every day. Sometimes it's raining. It was a rainy season, so it rains almost every day. And the thought, you know, we need to probably get her a bike. And how many people are out there? Maybe healthcare workers. We were focused on maybe healthcare workers and relief workers and just getting them the bikes. So it's just an idea. It's not something that there's any science around it, but visually seeing that opportunity, I figured.
Well, you have truly learned how to tap into your own inspirational DNA and have really made something amazing of that. If you were going to give somebody else, another CEO perhaps, mm-hmm. some encouragement, some advice, some counsel about how best to accomplish that in their life, what would you say?
Well, I guess for me, it's always been about the golden rule, just treating others how you want to be treated. And if you can truly follow that path, if you can think about that every decision you make, and also the principle of what comes around goes around, I think they're the same, but I've just kind of followed that in most every decision I make, and it seems to serve well. So,
and one other thing I have to ask, if you would be willing to share, somewhere in your life, there was a defining moment. You haven't always been this person, the capitalist pig that you once were, perhaps. But somewhere in your life, there was a defining moment. What was that?
Yeah. I tell the story because it really was a defining moment. And it was very early on when I started parking cars. And it was before I had my business. It was me working as an employee in a parking lot. And it was a Sunday night. It was slow. It was, I think, I was probably wondering what in the world am I doing with my life? I'm not away at college. I'm parking cars and pretty depressed. And it was, I was sitting in a parking hut and a gentleman walked by, a homeless man with a grocery cart full of tin cans. And he was pushing it up the road, going away from me. And I remember sitting there and looking at him. He didn't see me. I could see him. And thinking, gosh, you know, I got it pretty good now all of a sudden. And thinking, I had exactly $5 in my pocket, and I thought, I ought to give him that $5. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to give him that $5. I'm going to keep that $5. And he got a little bit further away, and I'm thinking, I should give him the $5. And it was just like on my back, give him the $5. And I was fighting it and fighting it and almost out of sight. And finally, I was just like, ugh. And I got up and I ran down there. I gave him the $5. And I can almost tell you from that moment, things changed almost immediately. I mean, it was within a week when I'm presented with this new opportunity. And it just, I truly think it was a test at that point of will you give or not give. And
what a great illustration, though, for being faithful in just the little things and how so much more can come your way by taking advantage of the opportunity that is there. And you didn't allow the depression and all the other things that you faced to hold you back. And so for that, hey, we applaud you and say that you are welcome here to reside at Inspiration Boulevard anytime because you're more than qualified, Chip.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a blessing to me. I don't feel like I'm the inspiration. It's just been I've been a very lucky person and very blessed and thankful for everything.
Good. Well, I know that people are going to be very interested in your story. We're going to have your story up on our website at inspirationboulevard.com. But if there's a website, something that you'd like to give or an email address where people can reach you, please share that.
Sure. You know, our corporate business is Ameripark, and we're Ameripark.com. And again, my name's Chip Patterson, and it's cpatterson@ameripark.com. Pretty simple.
Good. Well, I think that people would love to reach out, and if nothing else, just send just little words of encouragement along your way, and I think that'll make a big difference.
That's great.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hey, stick around for a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of time and interview your friend, Darren, here, and we're going to kind of change gears and talk about something, again, that we're all so very attuned to. We may not all be walking in it, Stone, but sooner or later, we have to come to grips with the fact that we don't get very far in life until we begin to grab onto our own self-confidence.
Well, you say these guys are friends, but I don't know how much of a friend this guy is, because this is not an act I want to follow.
Yeah.
You know, you refer to it as an illustration. This is an after-school special and a Hallmark movie all rolled into one. So I don't know how good buddies they really are, but I'm very interested to hear this next conversation.
It's going to be good. And and my friend Darren Cohen, I really have come to appreciate this guy. And he's not only my financial advisor, but he's also become a very good friend. And I think that he's also involved in a number of great things. But the thing, Darren, that I remember most in our little stroll down the golf course one day in the cart is when I asked you the question, who really had the greatest impact on your life? And you told me
my mom, absolutely, 100%. I have to give part of the credit for everything that happened. I am the person I am because of my mom. She gave me so much confidence growing up and believed in me when nobody else could.
Yeah, I'm just going to take a guess and just assume for a minute that you were no different than any other kid. You got picked on, you were bullied, and maybe even more so than the usual because you're not real good looking, Darren.
Thanks. Well, I was going to say that, but you're not supposed to.
I stand corrected. The man opened with the mom card. I think both of these guys are very inspired.
Well, I'm not sure that Terry's a friend anymore after putting me after Chip. I mean, Chip is the most humble, successful person I've ever met in my life, and it is an example to me. So,
but even so, I'm very serious when I tell you that I think that your team is inspired by your confidence. I think that your clients are clearly inspired by your level of confidence, and I think that it has become one of the real hallmarks for who you are and what you stand for. So tell us a little bit about how this self-confidence has served you through your career.
Sure. Well, thanks, Terry. You're exactly right. I did get picked on more than most, probably. Had lots of nicknames that we won't mention, lots of physical and mental abuse.
Did they rhyme?
not all of them, no. And in so many ways, you know, my mom was the classic mom who constantly tells you that you're the best looking kid, you're the best dressed kid, you're the smartest kid, you're the best athlete, and everything I did. And just surrounded me with love. You know, there's lots of things I could say about my mom. Not all are wonderful, but the one thing that I grasp onto is, without a doubt, there was always 100% love. And I've carried that on, hopefully, with my kids. That is my number one focus, is just, regardless of what happens, hopefully they always feel the love and the support. And a lot of that also carried over to anything that I had an interest in, my parents would support me. You know, if I wanted to play tennis one day, golf the next, you know, drums, they kept saying, okay, we'll let you try it out, you see what you think. You know, and part of that, I'll carry on, led me into martial arts, believe it or not. I know you didn't expect this coming, but...
who knew?
Martial arts can teach so much, from confidence to self-respect, to respecting others, your parents. So it's kind of a tie-in to my parents and my mom introducing me into that.
Well, I think it's pretty awesome that it has continued to show up in your family and in your work. And here it is, we're talking about, on a show, about inspiration at work. But it's interesting that you have brought to the table your experience as a result of having this incredible, positive, loving, caring family. So you know, I'm thinking about our listeners. And I'm thinking about so many who are in a spot right now trying to better understand how to assert themselves, how to become somebody that perhaps they aren't now, but they know that they can be. What would you say to them?
Yeah, you know, that's easy for me. I have a defining moment, much different from Chip's. But when somebody tells you no, or you can't, or it won't happen, I don't listen. I only listen.
You're hard. That's the trick. Just got to be hard-headed, right?
You do. I knew my entire life. I knew in junior high school I wanted to be a financial planner. I knew I wanted to own a financial planning firm.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't know what I was going to do 10 minutes from now when I was at that age.
I'm not sure I knew what a financial planner was, but I actually wrote a report that my mother kept describing this financial planning firm I would have. Well, I get out of college, I get into the industry, and at a minimum, three or four managers along the way said, it's not going to happen, Darren. You need to go find some other line of work. And, you know, call it bullheadedness, call it discipline, focus, good or bad, I just refused to give up. I just kept fighting through it.
Some people refer to that as the cockroach mentality. They just won't die.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Darren just won't die.
Then, you know, and you talk about the team that I've got, you know, and it's, I talk a lot about not losing any clients. Our firm, I can't remember us losing a client. But more importantly, I haven't lost a teammate. All of my staff have been with me from 1 8 years, 5 years, 3 years, and I don't think they're going anywhere. We just have a great team.
That's pretty valuable, especially in this day and time, to be able to have that much loyalty, especially in the industry that you are in. That's incredible. So I have to ask, in light of that, what are some of the things that you're doing that you could share with our listeners that would be helpful relative to team building and building loyalty?
Sure. I assume you mean at work, right?
Yeah,
Not my son's baseball team.
Well, it may be the same.
Well, one thing that was a big change, at one point I had a partner in my firm, and I don't believe in bureaucracies. I've never liked bureaucracies, and it's why I work for myself. And my rule...
He's unemployable, so.
Yes, I'm definitely unemployable. And I thought from day one that everybody on the team, whether you own the firm or not, should know the whole picture. So there was no secrets. Everybody in the office knows how much comes in, what goes out, everything that happens. And they know when times are good and bad. And they know, in fact, you mentioned it's been a tough economic cycle. They know it wasn't easy for me to keep them all on the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't do it because I knew they would, you know, forever love me for getting through it. But it's nice to know that we all appreciate each other so much by sticking through that tough time. And I'll tell you, there were days where they had to motivate and inspire me. You know, they saw me come in and said, all right, Darren, you need to pick me up.
Well, I love that, because one of the things that you're communicating in that is this principle of authenticity, a willingness just to be who you are, and to demonstrate to your team that there are times when you don't really have it all together.
Exactly. And that's why there's a couch in my office. That's for one time. Every now and then, I bring in somebody to be my therapist, and we sit on the couch.
What if you don't have the benefit of that kind of environment? You're in cubicle 23. You don't have a Chip Patterson kind of boss. You don't have a Darren kind of boss as a role model. What can you do to draw that strength from yourself and still have that kind of confidence and this degree of optimism?
Sure. Something that helped me recently, I like to read a lot, I guess as a lot of entrepreneurs do, and I read a book recently, The 4-Hour Work Week. And, you know, I have no interest in having a 4-hour work week. And I actually think, I don't think there was a single principle in the book that I read and said, okay, I'm going to do that. But what it did get me thinking is how outside the box you can think and how you can make difficult situations really good for yourself. And, you know, it started to make me think, you know, he talks about mini vacations or mini retirements. And I looked at my wife who, you know, has, like everybody, good and bad days. I thought, why don't you go away on a mini retirement with our 4-year-old daughter who doesn't have the school restraints that you know, a lot of kids have. So just kind of thinking outside the box. And, you know, so maybe in a cubicle, it's not easy to think, how do I make this work? You got to really tap into a creative brain, right?
Well, and the fact is that you have demonstrated that, your team lives that, and there are many others who are actually looking to you. I mean, the fact you're in a network of people, aren't you?
Sure, absolutely.
In around the country, and when you get together, I know from talking to you and from speaking with some of the others, they really look to you as kind of the model.
Thanks. Yeah, communication also, right? You know, my assistant had a really tough time, special needs child, difficult circumstances on top of financial issues. And instead of just going into her office and, you know, wallowing in her sorrows, she came to me and said, Darren, I have a really difficult situation here. She said, I can't see how I can keep working for you through this. Yeah, she's like, and practically, you know, in tears, doesn't want to leave, loves the job, and I didn't want to lose her. So hopefully she didn't do this to get this out of it, but I just spent a week, again, the creative brain, just thinking what I can do. I gave her a promotion and gave her a raise. And so, yeah,
but you've built the kind of culture where she felt like she could go to you. She knows she's going to get at least some kind of genuine empathy and get someone invested in her situation and try to help her think it through.
Yeah, I think so. I think all of us are comfortable in the office sharing everything with each other.
Well, Darren, thank you so much for being here and sharing your life and your story today. I am positive that it has helped inspire others. And the same kind of thing, I'd like to give you the opportunity, if you'd like to share with our listeners how they can reach you, please do so at this time, either a website or an email address.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Terry. The firm is Wealth Enhancement and Preservation of Georgia, nice and brief. The website is www.wealthofga.com. Email address dcohen@wealthofga.com.
Well, anyways, great to have you. And I think about our first show, and I think, wow, what a great success. We have picked up and learned some great things about being faithful in little things, how it can lead to bigger things through Chip, and what self-confidence does and how you motivate and inspire your team to keep people faithful and loyal through even very difficult times. And for that, I think I'm going to take something away from it I didn't have before. My life is richer because of it, and so I'm grateful. So to all of our listeners, what I would say is, if there's ever an opportunity in your life to potentially tap into your inspirational DNA and have a story like this to share, it is now. In fact, here's my challenge to you. It could very well be that you cannot control any of the circumstances in your life right now. And at work, maybe it's not so good. But here's a choice you can make. You could choose to be the most inspiring person that you know. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll see you next time at Inspiration at Work here at Inspiration Boulevard.
You have been listening to Inspiration at Work on the GII Network with your host, Terry Barber. Find us on the web at www.inspirationboulevard.com and follow us on Twitter @Inspiration Boulevard.